You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
Welcome to Hour 2 of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. Somebody said a classic Milwaukee rib session on Sarah Rodriguez. All this mess, all this hoopla, all this publicity to have $34,000 cash on hand. That's now I would suspect some money went missing. Because you would know. If you only have $34,000. And as a candidate, if you don't know, then we shouldn't trust you in crafting an $80 billion budget. And I don't want people to think it's personal. I'm actually having fun with the whole idea because when you think about it, it's utterly ridiculous. And I know that people take this personal, and I hope that David Crowley doesn't take anything that I say personal. He ran a crappy campaign. He was not himself. The best thing about David Crowley is literally who he is, his unfiltered, shining personality. And I saw that muted on the campaign trail to try and promote himself to people that might be intimidated by who he really is. And if you have to do that, if you have to mute your shine to make yourself more appealing to other people, that's not a position you would ever be happy in. It isn't. I like him as county executive. I think that he can do a lot of good right here, and we need a lot of good to be done. I think being on the stage of being the number one champion and cheerleader and the executive for the state of Wisconsin, I don't think that that is for an African American. It just isn't. This is their state. We occupy it too. We pay taxes, too. We spend money, too. We are the workers and the laborers and the producers here in Wisconsin. But it's still their state. And I don't believe that an African-American who is black and grown up and raised in our culture and in our traditions and in our history would be a good representative for rural white farmers. I just don't see the fit. Now, there are some people that have like a universal kind of appeal. They can, in fact, represent many different constituents. But at some point, there would be decisions that you would have to make where you would have to sacrifice resources and opportunity for the smaller constituency of African Americans in Wisconsin in favor of the larger constituency, which is overwhelmingly white and old. And I would never want to be in that situation. Running for office is not always about making a difference. It's about catering to the majority. And if you, your people, and your culture are not reflected in that majority, then you will be catering to other people. And that's very hard to do. The press conferences that you would have to give, the ribbon cuttings you would have to go to in Manitowoc and Marathon County and Spooner and Rice Lake and Vilas County and Woodruff. Who wants to do that? Yuck. You have to spend so much time away from Milwaukee, and I would argue that Milwaukee needs more time and attention than probably any other place in the state. Going and talking to constituents and voters in a Calumet County town hall where nine people show up. Nine people? Imagine traveling, because Wisconsin is not small. It's a big state. You're probably about, I don't know, from Milwaukee to Lake Superior, probably take you a good 5 hours. That's not small. And imagine you travel all the way across the state to go to the Iron County Democratic Party monthly meeting because you want to showcase your campaign to them. You travel all the way from Milwaukee. And you get there and it's four people there. And they're like, this is the best turnout that we've had all year. And it's four people. You drove for more hours than there are people. And then you turn right around and you go right back home. Ain't no way. Oh, I told you guys I was going to give you the categories that they got to spend money on. Because I want everybody to be a little bit more well-versed on how expensive a political campaign is. And so the categories that I'm going to list, Sarah Rodriguez can't afford any of them. She's going to stay in the race so she can continue to raise money to pay off her debt. So any money that someone gives her is not to help her become governor. It's so that she doesn't have to pay out of her pocket her campaign expenses that she was, for whatever reason, was unable to raise enough money to satisfy. That's ugly, ugly work. Imagine being on the phone with somebody saying, hey, hi, this is Sarah. Yeah, I'm still in the race for governor. Can you write me a check for $10,000? Because I have a whole bunch of debt. None of the money that you're going to give me is actually going to help me provide messaging and talk about my campaign in the state of Wisconsin. I just need this money so I don't put all this debt on my credit card. That's an embarrassing call to make. And plus, if you are a donor, because she raised $500,000, apparently, imagine if you're one of those people that gave her 6 month total that she raised, apparently, of $550,000. You're real mad right now because you're wondering, where my money at? What did you do with my money? Did you really buy a Toyota Camry? Did you remodel two bathrooms? Did you start a food truck? And those are all things that she can do with the money she has on hand. A food truck wouldn't be a bad idea, though. I would love a food truck. I'd park it somewhere. I'd serve the hungry customers. And then I would drive it home. And then I would just go back to another corner. It's kind of prostituting. You just work in the corner. Selling deliciousness.
A watermelon food truck? Fried watermelon?
No, you don't do nothing to the watermelon. And that watermelon that Zach gave me yesterday, don't put anything on watermelon. If you put salt or tahini on watermelon, I think that should be a misdemeanor. Don't do that. Why would you want to alter the taste of the fruits? First of all, we can't be eating the fruits and the vegetables right now because it'll give you the poops. They say that we're behind, like, it's a 6 week or something reporting lag between the contaminated. We think it's produce, but there's a 6 week lag from when someone is exposed to when that information becomes public. Thank Donald Trump for gutting the CDC.
RFK, you mean?
It ain't even him. He's got to work with the budget that he is given. Most of the federal government's budget for really important things, like, you know, controlling foodborne illness, has all been put in immigration enforcement. That's where a lot of those resources are going. Now, we have a bunch of states that are doing their own analysis, and they're trying to figure out. They think that a common bond or a common food item is lettuce, because lettuce is always very easy to blame, because Americans, I don't know if you know this, we eat a lot of lettuce, a ton of it. Taco Bell said, we're not serving lettuce at all no more until this thing gets rectified. Here's the other hard part. So let's say it's only been, I don't know, a few dozen cases where people are actually, that's not funny. But imagine you got the poop so bad, you got to go to the hospital. That's not a fun afternoon. Like, how can I see a doctor, please, very quickly?
Sir, what seems to be the matter?
If you keep me waiting here, I'll show you. I need to see. Oh. Too late. That's not fun. Here's the difficult part. So someone may have been exposed to whatever this foodborne illness is 2 weeks ago. And so they're going to ask you, hey, what did you eat 2 weeks ago Thursday? You don't know what you ate 2 weeks ago Thursday. Here, watch this. What did y'all have for lunch on Monday? See there? I don't know what I had for lunch on Monday. I'm assuming I had lunch on Monday, but I can't tell you what I had. So in order to be able to accurately trace and track whatever food supply in America is contaminated with the poop virus, people have got to recall what they ate several weeks ago. And you do a comparison with those foods amongst the other answers given by other people. But nobody writes down what they eat. Did you guys do this in elementary school where you were asked to track your food and it was like a unit in school where you had to do a food diary? Was it just us at Brown Deer? I think we did it in middle school and in elementary school where we had a little booklet and we wrote down everything that we ate, and we discussed it in class. Did any of y'all ever do this? I'm not the only one. Am I? And I remember, I wanted to take it seriously. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm not telling them that I ate another candy bar. I'm not writing that down. So I would only write down what I thought was healthy. I had 1.5 apple slices, and then I had a granola bar, and then I had 3.2 ounces of water. That's not at all what I ate. I was not the only one. Xavier, did you have to do a write down a food diary and like for health class or for some nutrition class? Did you have that experience in school?
Honestly, I can barely remember middle school.
Really? You're one of those?
Yeah.
Oh.
I can barely remember. Only thing I remember from elementary school was me DDTing someone in the wood chips and putting another person in the pedigree. Wrestling moves.
You're a menace.
I'm just saying.
I can remember a specific day going back to 4K, and I can remember every one of my teachers' names from kindergarten through middle school, and I can even name most of the teachers that I had in high school still to this day. And I graduated from high school 33 years ago. My memory is weird.
Yeah.
The stuff that I remember is shocking. But then there's a whole bunch of stuff I probably have forgotten more than I remember, but then I'll run into somebody that I haven't seen in I don't know how many years. But they'll remember something that I said or I did. They'll remember an experience they had with me that I have no recollection of whatsoever. So I've got an incredible long-term memory. The short-term, spotty. Somebody will ask me over the weekend, I'll go, hey, Sherwin, what did you talk about this week on your radio show? No idea. I don't know, a bunch of stuff. Sarah Rodriguez buying a bass fishing boat with her $34,000. That's about it. Oh, Sherwin, what did you have for lunch on Tuesday? I don't know. I don't remember that. But I can tell you that my kindergarten teacher's name was Miss Warfel. She's probably very dead now. Most of my teachers are probably dead.
That's crazy. The only teacher I remember is Mr. Sanders because he's the only black teacher I've ever had.
I had a couple of those. I had a couple black professors at UW-Milwaukee.
Well, I had black professors. I'm talking about elementary and high school and stuff.
Yeah, I remember because you sit in a damn classroom with them for half of a year. So because I have had so much exposure to my teachers, some were good, some were bad. I had a few teachers that were in the middle. Some were very, very good. Some were bad. But I remember in my early years, teachers used to teach for 40 years. Now that they hate your kids so much, they're done after 20 or 25 years. They're taking early retirement because they hate the kids very much a lot. So you got to keep in mind. So I started kindergarten in 1980. And Miss Warfel was not young because I always compare my teachers to my mother's age because my mother was always the example of old. And if a teacher was dramatically older than my mother, this would be very memorable for me because I would do a comparison like, oh, this teacher was older than my mother. But then my mother would say, Sherwin, you got an old ass teacher. I'm like, oh, okay, that tracks. But if I had a teacher that had been teaching, let's say for 30 years when I was in elementary school, then she probably started teaching just after World War II. That's crazy. Like in my lifetime, I probably had educators that were teaching before the schools were even integrated. Now all of a sudden here come all these black kids, and that teacher could legitimately say, I can remember when you little blacks were not even in our classroom. I remember FDR. I was going to tell you guys the categories of campaign expenditures. I'll do that next. You're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. I guess I should give out my social media. I think on Instagram it's Mr. Sherwin Hughes. Twitter, Sherwin again. You guys aren't writing this down anyway. My YouTube channel is HughesViews414. Subscribe to that. I'm two away from having 700 people. So it's two people subscribe, and I would give you a prize, but I'm not going to give you anything. The satisfaction of being my 700th YouTube subscriber should be reward enough. So make sure you sign up for that. What else? I got an OnlyFans.
Oh, yeah?
Dog, calm down. Why are you getting so excited?
I don't know. This seems like a funny thing.
No, I ain't showing no tallywhacker on OnlyFans. It was $9.99 a month to see my tallywhacker? That's insane. Not enough money.
You get 1,000 people to join, $10,000 a month.
I look at the individual costs. Because when you think about it, there are some women that I actually would love to see naked. Like, I don't want to meet them or talk to them or go through all that it takes to see them naked. But if I can pay $7.99 to see you naked, I got $8.
Yeah.
I went to Dairy Queen yesterday and spent $8 on a Sunday.
You know, I think we should destigmatize sex work.
It's not stigmatized with me.
It's not stigmatized with me, but a lot of people, they, oh, she has an OnlyFans. She's not going to have a future.
True.
Nah.
True.
Not if I'm hiring.
You're not hiring. So, we'll see. What would you hire him for? Exactly.
You know, secretary.
People in the internet generation have no concept of what forever is. They think, oh, this is a good idea right now. I'm going to do this right now. I'm going to make a bunch of money right now. Your right now looks a lot different than 20 plus years from now. Just like these tattoos that y'all are getting. Some of y'all are stupid. Stupid. When is a face tattoo ever going to be a good idea? I want the world, when they look at my face, to see permanent writing on it. What? Have y'all ever thought about just like making an autobiography and like instead of it displaying your life in pictures on your body, just write it down. Write it down in a book. Do a little journaling. Just do a diary. There was a girl that I had been interested in for many, many years. I worked with her when I was on the basement crew on 98.3. So this is, hell, I started there in 07, almost 20 years ago. So she was a salesperson. So I didn't see her very often. In fact, when we came in and did our show, she would be leaving for the day. Very prim and very proper. She was a very professional lady. Whole back was covered with a tattoo. Did, because she had none on her arms, none on her legs, but her whole back was like, it was the Garden of Eden. Oh, it's beautiful.
My kind of woman.
I'm sure she is. You like tatted up women, don't you? Well, nowadays, you don't have a choice.
Well, I mean, there's some women that aren't super tatted up, but a lot of women that I deal with, they happen to have tattoos. I have none.
The one you got now is tatted.
Yeah.
You okay with that?
Yeah, I'm more than okay with it. You know, tattoos are very, you know, hot sometimes in certain places.
What places?
You know, it all depends. You know, I like a nice chest piece, you know, between the breastplate and, you know, a nice little tramp stamp sometimes.
Oh, good Lord.
You know, those little artsy tattoos, they're very hot sometimes, you know. I don't discriminate.
For a democratic, socialist, communist, liberal, lefty, liberal, progressive, I know you're not all those things, but you're most of them, you're quite misogynistic.
No, no, no.
You don't think so?
No.
I love objectify women better than me. I learned from you, actually.
I love women. All them. You know how many women?
The best objectifiers love women, too.
Oh, no, no. I have so many women friends. You know, they would say I'm a great ally.
And a racist has black friends. You ain't saying nothing slick to a can of oil, buddy.
I'm just saying.
All right. Take a break. Come back. Talk about the different categories that political campaigns have got to spend money on. So when you hear that a candidate has raised several million dollars, I'm going to show you exactly where those dollars go. But not Sarah Rodriguez. She can just get a food truck, a bass boat, and some solar panels. But she can't be governor. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
At 10:30, we're going to be talking to Keaton Kloss. She's the executive director of the Milton House. Did you know that we've got history right here in Wisconsin? There's an Underground Railroad stop, and you can take a tour of it. We're going to be talking to Keaton Kloss. I got to clean this show up a little bit.
Why? What's wrong?
Because whenever you got company, you got to be on your best behavior. We're over here getting wild, talking about OnlyFans accounts and stuff. I have a level of class and sophistication I like to carry myself with, and I also want to pride myself on putting together a radio show that is going to be evergreen. It will stand the test of time, whether someone is listening to it live or they catch it later on this evening or in 10 years. I want what we talk about to be relevant and timely for many, many years to come. So we're going to talk about the Milton House. Stop on the Underground Railroad because slaves came to Wisconsin. Some kept going. Some stayed. So talk about the Milton House, and you can go take a tour. They have an event coming up in August as well. You can do stuff, take a tour of some history. A Modern Wisconsin gubernatorial primary is one of the most expensive statewide campaigns in the Midwest. The exact mix varies by candidate, but campaigns typically spend between 55 and 70% of their budget on voter communication, which includes television, digital advertising, mail, and radio, with the remainder devoted to staffing, field operations, fundraising, polling, travel, compliance, and overhead. As of July 2026, the remaining Democratic candidates running for governor in the state of Wisconsin are Mandela Barnes. They have David Crowley listed. Hell, David Crowley might as well jump back in. He got plenty of money. Joel Brennan, Francesca Hong, Kel DeRoyes. And then it says Sarah Rodriguez, though her campaign has recently reported significant financial problems after discovering inaccurate campaign finance records. A reasonable budget for a competitive $4 million statewide Democratic primary campaign, roughly the level needed to remain competitive in Wisconsin's major media markets. To be competitive, candidates need to spend about 28% of their budget on television advertising, which is $1.1 million. They need to spend another 12% on digital advertising, which includes YouTube, Facebook, and Google. That is $480,000. They need to spend about 10% of their budget on direct mail to voters, $400,000. Campaign staff salaries is only 13% of the budget, but it's $520,000. Payroll taxes and benefits is another $80,000. Polling and research, which is only 3% of the campaign's budget, that's still $120,000. You got to pay media consultants, $160,000. General consultants, $120,000. Fundraising consultants, $80,000. Field organizers and canvassers, you know, the people that are wearing the T-shirts that are out in the community knocking on doors and whatnot, $200,000. Text messaging and phone programs. I hate getting text messages from candidates. I hate it. Because then when you say, you type in stop to end, it stops from that candidate. But then the next candidate. Campaigns pay $80,000 for those text messages. The voter file, which is the list of voters, like who you should be corresponding with, who you should be sending direct mail to, and who you should be targeting with your digital ads, that costs $40,000. Printing, literature, yard signs, and little palm cards, that's another $80,000. Yard signs, $40,000. Campaign office rent and utilities, you got to have a campaign office, that's $40,000. Hotels and lodging for your staff as you're making different campaign stops and tours throughout the state, $40,000. Candidate events, another $60,000. Photography and video production. You got to do video shoots. You got to take a whole bunch of photographs so you can put nice pictures on your campaign literature. Photographers make $60,000. Xavier, you should think about being a photographer for one of these campaigns. You can make you a cool $60,000 in a short period of time, but you're not going to get it from Sarah Rodriguez. You can only take pictures of her posing on her bass boat.
I'm available, Fran.
Oh, Franny, she'd hire you. She got good money, too. Legal and compliance, $40,000. Accounting and bookkeeping, which is only 0.5% of campaign expenditures, that's still $20,000. Sarah Rodriguez probably didn't spend enough money on the accounting and the bookkeeping. Because I mentioned earlier in the week, your campaign manager should not have a whole hell of a lot to do with your campaign finance reporting. You literally hire an accounting firm. Because it's very complicated. You got to make sure that everything is right. All the entries have got to be correct and they have to be timely, et cetera, et cetera. So you want to hire a firm that specializes in accounting, not your campaign manager that owes $8,000 in rent that has financial troubles of her own. That's not a good person to manage your money. And then when the books are opened up, Sarah Rodriguez throws the campaign manager under the bus, even though Sarah Rodriguez had to sign off on all of that. All of those numbers. All right, I'm take a break, come back. Keaton is her name. Keaton Kloss. That's her last name? That's what we're going to interview her. She's from the Milton House. She's going to tell us many. Is she in there right now?
Yeah, she's waiting to come in the room.
Oh, hi, Keaton.
Is she she's not in the room with me. She's in the hallway.
All right. They're going to bring her in and talk about the Underground Railroad. I once had a conversation with somebody that thought the Underground Railroad was actually a railroad, like with a train on it. They didn't. They thought it was a subway. It was a white guy. He's like, Sherman, how did they have subways way back in the day? I'm like, subway restaurants? He's like, no, the Underground Railroad, how did they build it? And that's when I knew that history is failing our children. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
As promised, Keaton Kloss is in the studio. She's the executive director of the Milton House. Ladies and gentlemen, did you know that we have historical sites right here in Wisconsin? You don't have to travel far away. You can go to Janesville and visit the Milton House. First of all, Keaton, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about this historic site that we have in Janesville called the Milton House and what it represents in history.
Sure, yeah. The Milton House Museum is a historic house museum in Milton, Wisconsin, which is just a few minutes north of Janesville. And we are Wisconsin's only certified Underground Railroad site that is open to the public. So we are not the only one. Actually, here Milwaukee has quite a bit of Underground Railroad sites with Joshua Glover and Racine. But those sites now are like a plaque to the building he was held in, or the other sites are privately owned, like churches or houses. So we are the only one that the public can come and tour and walk in the footsteps of freedom seekers and learn about this really incredible part of American history that a lot of people don't realize Wisconsin even had a part in.
Do you find that to be true, that a lot of folks, maybe even that live in cities and towns that were prominent stops on the Underground Railroad, they don't even know anything about it?
It is a little unnerving as a historian, I guess, what people do or do not know or believe about the Underground Railroad. So, yes, it's definitely an education just on the Underground Railroad in general for the majority of visitors that are coming to us.
The original founders, Joseph and Nancy Goodrich, were originally from New York. The Goodriches were devout Seventh-day Baptists.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, they were known for one, two, three different things. They celebrated the Sabbath on Saturday. They were believers in the temperance movement, so they didn't drink.
Nope, no drinking, no gambling, no smoking.
It's not a fun life, but at least they wanted to help slaves to freedom. And then they were also ardent abolitionists. Are there like details about the lives of the Goodrich family on display at the Milton House?
Yes. So Joseph, he does come from New York. He comes here with his wife, his two kids, and about nine other people. They are Seventh-day Baptists, and they are still a religion today. Their world headquarters is actually in Janesville, Wisconsin today still. But they kind of refer themselves as the black sheep, even of the Baptist organization. And one of the reasons was because they allowed black people to be part of their religion as early as like the 1700s. And so you could not be a Seventh-day Baptist at that time and not be, you couldn't just say slavery was bad. You had to be actively doing something to stop it. And so Joseph comes to the Milton area and actually founds the town of Milton, and he immediately starts a Seventh-day Baptist church. Builds Milton House as a stagecoach in 1844, and then also founds Milton College or Milton Academy, which was a college that ran in Milton until 1982. And he used that college to also pass out his abolitionist views and beliefs through speakers like Sojourner Truth comes and talks there, and you know, the professors and stuff like that. So He was definitely doing his part along with running a stop on the Underground Railroad.
Keaton Kloss is my in-studio guest. He is the executive director of the Milton House located in Janesville. Keaton, I know a little bit of history, too. I know that the local newspaper in Waukesha is called The Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called The Freeman because Waukesha at the time was a very anti-slavery abolitionist bastion. But a reason why they titled their paper, still to this day called The Freeman, by the way, is because they thought the Milwaukee Journal was too pro-slavery. Talk about a little bit of irony, but history is full of ironic facts. Keaton, people can tour the Milton House. How can they go about doing that, or what are some of the things that they will see on that tour?
Yeah, we are open right now in the summer. We're open 6 days a week. The only day we're closed is Monday, so Tuesday through Sunday, 10 to 4. We have tours every hour on the hour. They last about an hour. They're handicap accessible. Thankfully, we have air conditioning, so it's a comfortable tour. On the tour, you learn about Joseph and the founding of Milton and kind of a little bit of background about the community, because that's really important to why the Underground Railroad site was there. And then you obviously learn about the Underground Railroad. Probably the big thing people know about us is that we do have an actual underground passage that was used to move freedom seekers just between buildings on our property. I get a lot of questions asking, so where do I buy my train ticket?
That's a real thing.
I say one of my first days working at the museum, this lady walked in and wanted a tour, and I said, okay, let's do that. And she goes, well, where do I buy my train ticket? And I laughed because I thought she was joking, and then she kind of just looked at me, and then she's like, well, but if I leave my stuff here, will like the train bring me back here? How does this work? And so there is a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of education that needs to happen on what the Underground Railroad was. And so, yes, it is a real thing, and it's something that we work hard to, so I have to explain to people, it says our passage it's about 45 feet long. It just goes between two buildings, and it was used to move people between those buildings, secretively. But we are one of the few in the country that has kind of an underground passage. Again, people think it's an actual railroad and that it's physically underground. A lot of places just use their houses or their barns or their churches. They didn't have special rooms and tunnels. These were everyday people just using what they had to help people on their journey to freedom.
I was just remarking to my producer that I had a very similar experience with an individual that thought that the Underground Railroad was like an actual subway,
mm-hmm.
underground infrastructure. I'm saying to myself, first of all, why would you think that? And I don't want to, be mean to someone who was uninformed, but that's the reason why we have the Milton House, so people can become much more informed. But I'm thinking to myself, if you want to keep the whole Underground Railroad a secret, you can't be digging subway tunnels, because that would kind of blow your cover. The good news is you average 4,000 school children a year, and this is a fantastic education for them because they get to tangibly see not just the structure, not just the building, but even that underground passage. So talk about how schools are welcome to do field trips at the Milton House.
Yeah, so we do between, February with being Black History Month, we're seeing more and more schools kind of take advantage of that and how it fits into their curriculum. So really from about February through, early June, depending on how schools run, we have school kids predominantly about fourth grade because that's when they're learning Wisconsin history, but we get kids all the way up through college. Pretty young, and so they can come for a tour, and like I said, it's similar to what we offer the general public, but they get to learn about Joseph Goodrich and the founding of Milton, and for especially fourth graders, we give them an introduction into what slavery was, a little bit of Civil War background, talk to them about Underground Railroad history, and just try and help them understand, like I said, this important part of American history, which I was just talking with some other museum professionals the other day, and we were talking about how we just don't give kids enough credit for what they can understand and what they want to learn. And it is incredible what even fourth graders can comprehend about this and the thoughts and ideas and things that can really start them thinking on. And so tours are a fantastic way. We also are in the process of developing virtual tours because obviously not every school kid can come see us, whether it's, trying to get busing or they're too far away, or we have a capacity in our building as well. And so we're really hoping with these virtual tours that are going to be interactive that, even kids that can't come to us physically are going to have that opportunity for education. And then every May, we have our Civil War Day Living History event, and then our Friday is a school day. This year, we had close to 1,500 school kids come, Northern Illinois, local kids, homeschool, parochial, public, and they just get an opportunity to go through about 25 stations and learn all about life during the Civil War. And we have a fantastic Lincoln reenactor. And so we want to have as many opportunities for kids to come and experience history, because there are studies that show that when kids learn that this stuff is happening in their backyard, it's going to be more impactful for them.
There's a sensitivity that exists about teaching children about slavery, because there might be an assumption that they will feel a level of guilt. And I don't believe that education does that. I think we have a duty to inform children. And yes, they can handle it. Yes, they can take it. And they will be much better prepared for the world if they know the history that has transpired. And Wisconsin played a very prominent role in the Civil War. In fact, Camp Randall.
Camp Randall.
Where the Madison football players do the footballing. Mm-hmm. That was a very prominent fort in the Civil War. Mm-hmm. Looks like you got some events. Arts and Crafts on the Lawn every third Sunday or the third Sunday in August. Can you tell us about Arts and Crafts on the Lawn?
That one must be outdated. I'm sorry. We haven't had that one for a while.
All right. Well, there you go. You can bring it back.
Yeah. So, but we're summer, we don't have as many events, but coming up in the fall now, we have September, we have our Twilight Tours, which is one of our longstanding really popular events, because you get to be in the house after dark. And people like to be in historic houses after dark. So that's coming up. And then we do have like a paranormal investigation in October. If you're into ghost hunting, you can come do that with us. And then, you know, for Christmas, we have some other events as well. And it's just, we have our popular Hops and History Talk as well. That is happening in October and September and October. And it is something that we partner with a local brewery, and we go hang out in their tap room and we talk history and you drink beer, and it's a really fun time. So those events are going to be happening as well. And then our big one is our signature event. It's our first year doing it. It's going to happen September 26th at the Janesville Performing Arts Center. And we are bringing the Fisk Jubilee Singers from Fisk University in Nashville, Tennessee. And if you don't know who they are, Fisk University was founded right after the Civil War. And they for formerly enslaved people to get an education. And in 1871, they were having extreme financial trouble. So basically, they put together some students who sang Negro spirituals, and they started touring around the country, even went over to England and performed for Queen Victoria, raised enough money to save their school, and they have been doing it ever since. And they won a Grammy in 2020. And they are going to be coming up here and performing along with an opening act by Kothi Dance Company of Milwaukee. And so we're so excited to bring this level of talent to Wisconsin, to Janesville. And all the proceeds from the event are going to support the Milton House. We are a nonprofit. We're not state, city, federally funded. It's all through events, tours, donations. And so we're really excited about this one.
Keaton Kloss, Executive Director of the Milton House, located at 18 South Janesville Street in Milton, Wisconsin. They can be reached via phone at 608-868-7772. That is 608-868-7772. And also, I'm assuming that admissions prices are probably pretty reasonable, right?
Yeah, I think it's this is always a quiz for me. I think it's $20 for adults, and then we have discounts for seniors and kids. Kids 5 and under can come for free. If you bring a group of 10 or more people to do a group tour, you get some discounted rates. All of that can be found on our website at miltonhouse.org. If you're a veteran, you can get in for free. If you become a member, you can get in for free. And yes, we do, you know, we like I said, we tour revenue is a way that, you know, revenue in stream for us, but we want to make this as accessible to people as we can. We want to eliminate as many barriers as we can. So we try and keep our prices as reasonable as possible.
Thank you, Keaton. We appreciate you coming here and telling us about the Milton House.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. Thank you.
I read the YouTube comments, I can't make heads or tails of them. Sometimes I wonder what my radio show is even about because I'm expecting to hear, you know, discussion or read commentary about what I'm discussing. First of all, I need you to not take over my show in the YouTube chat, Reginald Jones. Nobody care about you going to Yugoslavia. We're not even talking about Yugoslavia. We're talking about Sarah Rodriguez buying a boat. She's a lieutenant governor. If she hasn't raised enough money to have a viable campaign. David Crowley dropped out of the race with $300,000 and Sarah Rodriguez got $30,000. It should have been the other way around. She should have dropped out and endorsed him. I don't know if David was ready. He's going to get mad. Let him get mad. I'm just being honest. Madison is a wolf's den where they do not care about Milwaukee. There's a handful of legislators that represent Milwaukee. They care. But there are 132 legislators in total. And the vast majority of them are fighting for their cities, their towns, their counties, and their districts. And Milwaukee is an afterthought, and it's very difficult to be a governor from Milwaukee, especially as county executive, because you know what the needs are of this city, but you have to represent the rest of the state equally, meaning 80% of your representation will be for the people in the places that are not in Milwaukee. And I think that that's a real tough position for an African-American legislator to be in, because isn't there a prevailing wisdom that if you are an African-American, and maybe this has changed, I don't really know with this younger generation, but I know that if you were running for public office and you relied on the black vote, like a black business relies on black dollars, then your representation will be of those people who oftentimes are not represented very well. I also don't believe that white people can do an adequate job of representing black people, especially when you have white people that think that the Underground Railroad was an actual train. Good God. And I thought I was the only one that had ever been exposed to that kind of ignorance. I am shocked every single day at how little the master race actually knows. And I use that term very lightly. If I'm not mistaken, there is no Neanderthalic DNA in the blood of an African or an African American. I need you to think about that. Neanderthals just died out because they weren't equipped to make it. We don't have any of their DNA in us. They have Neanderthalic DNA in them, so not exactly an ingredient that you want in your genetic makeup if you want to call yourself the master race. You know what I'm saying? And shout out to the Neanderthals, because there was a lot of humping, a lot of interbreeding, a lot of interracial humping back then, because like the Africans walked out of Africa and went to Asia, hump, 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 and then went north to Europe, hump, 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 hump. And so our DNA as black African descendants is found in every other human being. In fact, there's a common DNA, mitochondrial DNA. That's the important one, because that is the DNA that has passed from every mother to every child. And because all human beings share the same mitochondrial DNA, and this is not speculation, this is not guesswork, this was not someone that came up with this to hurt somebody's feelings. Because we all have the same mitochondrial DNA, we all have a common mother. And I know that this hurts a lot of people when I say this, but I'm not here to spare your feelings. I'm here to tell you the truth that no one ever wanted you to know, because if you knew the truth, you would have a whole different perception of history. This is why lies can literally live forever. Our mitochondrial DNA came from a very small, little 4-foot-tall being that was somewhat tree-dwelling, and it walked around a little bit, but it liked to hang out in the trees. And they actually call her Eve. And she's from the Olduvai Gorge in, yep, Africa. You all got a black mama. That's disappointing. But that's just human genetics. You know what I'm saying? The only reason why we have differences in skin color is because the further from the equator you evolve, the less direct the sunlight is. And so if you evolved in a place where the sunlight is less direct, you need less melanin, and you want to be able to produce vitamin D from that indirect sun. What melanin does is it protects you from much more direct sunlight, which we know is evident near the tropics and near the equator. So melanin acts as a protective barrier from the very intense ultraviolet rays of the sun. But the further north or further south that you go, the lighter the skin gradients get, the less melanin is necessary. That's the only difference. Vitamin D production is very important for pregnant women because that hormone is important for the health of babies. So if you evolved in a climate further away from the equator where it's colder and the sun rays are less direct, you don't need as much protective melanin in your skin because women that are in gestational periods need to produce vitamin D so they have healthy babies. That is the only difference in human skin color. We are all essentially the same. Now, we've divided ourselves into different camps, and we've divided ourselves into different tribes, and sometimes we go to war, but we're all the same. Can't we all just get along and just love on each other? Can't we all collectively just work together and telling Sarah Rodriguez to get out of the race for governor because she just isn't fit to be the governor of the Wisconsin? But Kelda's not fit either. God bless Kelda. She's a very nice lady. I like my strategy and that we put our weight behind an underdog. The underdog would be Joel Brennan because we can make it abundantly clear that the African-American voter does have political influence, especially in a race like this, to determine a winner. I'm going to put Franny Pants in a separate category. Franny Pants brings up really great issues that could come to fruition in a homogeneous racial society where everybody is the same race and there is no discrimination based on race. France policies are perfect for, you know, Europe. I don't want European-style government in America. Europe, quite honestly, the ones we need to blame for a lot of this. And I don't want to reenact that here and to think that it could potentially work. No, thank you. We've gotten enough from Europe. This damn wildfire smoke might be from Europe. When I was asking Keaton, she's from Janesville. She made the trek. She drove an hour and 25 minutes to sit here with me for 10 minutes. She could have did it over the phone, but we're glad she was here. I asked her if it was smoky in the Janesville. She said, yeah, it's smoky in the Janesville too. So it's smoky there and it's smoky here too. But right now I got to take a commercial break because my hour three is about to start. You're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.